to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Eleni, happy birthday!
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be celebrating another year with Base Beauty and Where Brains Meet Beauty and you and everybody who's listening.
Okay, so I'm going to assume some great workouts were part of the weekend to celebrate your birthday. Tell me what you did.
There were some great workouts. Berries, it's also their birthday during my birthday month. So this is like their 26th birthday, 26th year of being in business, Berries Boot Camp for anybody who does the workout. And they are having a challenge right now. So I went with my sisters and my mom and a couple of my friends to Berries. And then I got some Pilates classes in at Corburn. So that was great.
Well, that sounds like so much fun. It actually ties into the theme that we're in, which is health, right? A really important part of the wellness industry. And our guest today, Kelly Fanning, she's actually a huge fan of Peloton. And on the podcast, you'll have to go to Instagram to see it because it's our after show. We had a really fun game about like her riding Peloton and like what music she listened to and what leader she'd want to be a part of. So a really nice tie into your birthday weekend.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I love Peloton. I did it for a while. I have fallen off the wagon of it for a bit now, but the instructors are amazing and the playlists are amazing. So I can't wait to watch that game. How do you know Kelly?
I met Kelly a couple years ago at this point. She was working at Bayer on Midol. And as someone who's on the board of Girls Helping Girls, period, of course, I talk to anybody who's like at all touching the period space. So I got to know her then, and now she has a very cool new job.
Okay, that's amazing. We love the work that Girls Helping Girls, period, does. It's amazing that you've been on the board for so many years, Jodi. And speaking of, we might have another donation for them at the end of the year after we count up all the we've taken out of these episodes. Tell us about this challenge you're on.
Okay, so you can't see her now if you're watching this, but Natasha's literally right there. Natasha's our producer. She's listening to everything I do. And because she's the producer, she has to listen to everything I say like four or five times as she's editing episodes and putting together all this content. And she told me at the end of last year that I say a lot. And she wants me to stop saying She wants me to just take a pause, breathe. I don't have to make a sound effect. So she had this idea that we can count up all the I say in every episode during the course of the year and donate money for every to Girls Helping Girls, period. So I have not gotten a report yet from Natasha because we're almost at the end of the year. This might be a really big amount of money that we'll be receiving, but it did create incredible awareness for me. I will not say that I am free, but when I say it, I hear it. And that's good because before I would say it, I didn't even pay attention.
I love that so much. That is a really great challenge. I wonder if we can get anyone else who's listening in to take this on as well. Tell us in the comments on LinkedIn. So Jodi, tell us more about this episode.
Wait, you just said
I did. There's a dollar for me. Okay, tell us more about this episode and what we can expect to hear in this conversation.
Okay, so Kelly's had a really long career in health. She worked at Johnson & Johnson for many, many years. She worked at Bayer. And now she gets to lead the Clinique North America team, which is very, very cool. And she loves this brand because of its dermatology heritage. And she was a customer of it from, you know, her teen years. So I just love hearing these stories about people getting to work for brands that they dream of. You know, if that were me, maybe one day I'll work for Disney, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, love talking to Kelly. This conversation with Kelly is all about leadership and leadership style and growing leaders and being a great mentor and pushing people to be great. So it's an incredible episode to listen to if you need a little bit of inspiration on how to be a great boss.
Okay, I'm very excited to hear this. Okay, let's hear more on episode 271 with Kelly Fanning.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are a career journey podcast talking about what it's like to define success and reach for it in the beauty and wellness industries. Today, we continue our health wisdom theme with Kelly Fanning, SVP and General Manager of Clinique North America. With a wealth of experience in both consumer sales and marketing, Kelly is known for growing premier brands, leading high-performance teams, and championing diversity and inclusion in the industry. A visionary executive with over 20 years' experience who's reshaping the beauty landscape. I'm excited to get into this conversation about her career journey all on episode 271. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Hi, I'm excited to be number 271.
It's like at the deli counter when your number is called.
I know. Like, my number has been called.
So full disclosure for everyone listening, when Kelly and I scheduled this, she was working at Bayer on Midol.
Yes.
So health made like so much sense, and it still makes sense, and Kelly's going to explain to us why.
Yeah.
But I just wanted everyone to know, like, we are in a really exciting industry and people get new opportunities all the time, and it's kind of cool actually that we plan this when you're in one very cool job and now you're in another awesomely cool job and we can get to hear about those transitions.
Yes, I'm excited.
So we, career journey, we start at the beginning, and the beginning is when we daydream as little kids, right? So I know you have little kids at home. So when you were little, what career did you want? Like, what was the first thing that was on your mind?
Okay, it's funny. I went through kind of my mom has recently given me a box that I think she was happy to get out of her house. And by age, 10, I really wanted to be a lawyer. That was my big ambition. And that was actually the path that I was on all through college. I majored in political science. I took the LSAT. And up until I interned with a law office, which is why I always say internships are critical, because they not only teach you what you want to do, but sometimes you find out by doing a job what you don't want to do. And I realized that I didn't want to be a lawyer, which was good. I didn't go down the law school path, at least. And it's funny, right? I have two little boys. I have a 5-year-old and a 7.5-year-old. And I think the question you're always asked as a child is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And what I started to do with my boys is say, what are the things you want to do when you grow up? Because I think what I realized is, what I wanted to do was really help people, which is what's always drawn me to consumer products, being close to the consumer, but also drawn me to healthcare because I really want to help people. So I ended up helping people. I just did it in a different way. So I kind of wish we would start to help our kids understand skill sets, capabilities, than actually like a job, that one job you want to do, because none of us do one job.
I love that. And it also refocuses on like what brings you joy.
Totally.
Right? Instead of like, what mechanism are you going to use every day? Like, how are you going to, hold a hammer? It's saying like, what makes you happy, right?
It is, right? Because it's not only about transferable skill sets when you think about going from one job to the next, but it's really important to have that transferable passion. Like, what are you most passionate about that when you look at a new job opportunity or you look at opportunities that you think about what is going to give you joy, right? And you can... The healthcare space is so wide. It's so broad. And self-care has even broadened it now to really make beauty a part of it. And so, if that's your passion, then your space and what you can do feels a lot bigger than law. I want to be a lawyer, right? That feels tight. That feels small. So I think I learned too late in life to understand your skill sets, understand your capabilities as you build your career, then focus on the job, right? People get stuck on titles. People get stuck on, taking a job. It's about building your skill sets and your capabilities.
I love that. I'm going to start doing that with my kids, even though they're teens. I still feel like it's totally appropriate.
Oh, it's still time.
Yeah. I meet people all the time. I mean, people my age or older who hate their jobs. Like, let's say they're physicians. And they're like, well, I went to medical school. I already did all this. I'm like, but you don't still have to do that. Like, if you have like some financial freedom to change paths, then you don't have to be stuck in this job that you thought was your dream when you're 19, when you went to college, right?
Totally.
So we have to give ourselves room to change our mind, I think, a lot with our careers.
Yeah. A segue into that is maybe some of the best advice I ever received from a mentor. Sometimes your mentors are really good at telling you your strengths. But the best mentors tell you sometimes what you don't want to hear, but you need to hear. And I remember in my career, I had a very traditional sales trajectory and sales path. And I had the opportunity to go into marketing. And one of my mentors at the time was like, you're a chicken. Like, just go. Why are we even having this conversation? Like, go. When you look at presidents and general managers, so many come from marketing. It's going to open the world to you. And, every other mentor was kind of like, well, do what you want and follow your path, which is all great. But sometimes that tough love of hearing like, no, chicken, go for it, is like super helpful. So I try now as a mentor to really make sure that I give that honest advice and push and, you know, sometimes go out of your comfort zone. And the worst that happens is you do something you don't like and then you know and you go back.
Yeah, I think of my career as a backpack of experiences.
Oh, we love that.
And I have had a lot of jobs. So some I left willingly, some I was fired from, some I got laid off from, whatever the circumstances. I left each one with something to throw in the pack. Even if
Absolutely.
I like really didn't like my boss or I really didn't like jive with the work, I knew that I had a takeaway. And I mean, all of that has helped me so much as an entrepreneur now. Like my least favorite job was my first job out of college, which was I was an assistant account executive at BBDO. And my job was literally like to take this thing and bring it from the third floor to the fourth floor. like the job was, you know, it was so like, you know, admin and early learner in advertising. But I got to watch a lot of things happen. And I learned there that like, you don't say no. There's no no for our clients. There's always a way. Even if it's not what they think the way is, you're going to find a solution. And gosh, like I just didn't like that job at all. But I use it every single day in my day job, like literally every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes when I look back at my career, the jobs I didn't want to take and maybe I didn't love the most is where I actually learned the most because I learned just as much about myself as I did that I didn't want to do a job, right? I learned that I can do it. I can do this skill set, but I don't really love it, right? It wasn't hard for you to say no and build those solutions, but it wasn't necessarily probably that piece of the time at BBDO that was filling your cup of joy. So, you know, you always have to have the passion with the job and the skill set to match. It's hard sometimes to find that.
Yes. And I also think we're set up for a little bit of failure in this because like movies, TV shows, I guess social media now, like they tell you this story that's sort of like the fantasy version of like what's life like after college and how like...
Same with parenthood.
Well, true. And like what being an adult is like and what the expectations are. And these are all, they're all fake and made up and they really are just stories. And I think we get into our own heads in a negative way that like, oh, my career is not advancing the way it should be. Or my peers that I graduated with are doing X, Y, Z and I'm making, you know, a lot less money than them or whatever the circumstances are. But there really is just not like one way to do this. Like just find your joy, get paid, be able to put like, you know, food on the table, you know, and have a warm home in the winter and a cool home in the summer and like everything's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's so easy early on in your career because look, you spend your whole early childhood being in a class with someone, you're all competing, you're all in kindergarten, then you're all in first grade. And then when you graduate from college, you kind of all go your separate ways, but your brain still compares. It's how you grew up. It's how you're trained to be. And people get stuck there. A lot of the times I talk to mentees and I'm like, you're looking left and right and you're not looking forward. Mm-hmm. And you have so many years, like taking a 1 year off or doing a job for 6 months. And like, that's nothing on your resume over time. It will be nothing. Right now it feels like a lot and it's heavy, but it's hard to sometimes see that when you're in it. And I think when you're earlier in your career, you know, you so much want to get ahead, but you're not looking ahead, if that makes sense. You're looking too much as to what others are doing and you get consumed with that. And it can be really distracting sometimes for talent.
Well, I want to talk about your career journey and I want to do something a little different, like through the lens of being managed, because now you have a lot of people reporting to you. I imagine you're like a dream boss.
Oh.
So we heard something at the Women's Wear Daily Women in Power event where I saw you last. I don't remember who on stage said it, but it was something about like what matters in your career, if you think about it, is like the people that you reported into, those bosses who inspired you, that made you love your job or learn something new and pushed you to the next level. That's what's really important. So I imagine you've been that to a lot of people. So let's go to like that first job in, you know, healthcare or beauty.
Yeah.
Because we left the law behind and we looked forward to something else. What was that first role that excited you?
Oh my gosh. I mean, what drew me into healthcare was, it was actually my first job with Johnson & Johnson. I had an amazing boss who, you know, and this is what I think about all the time as a leader now. I was empowered. So, and that word is so overused, but what it means is you have someone that believes in you, believes in your insights and your ability in the business to bring recommendations forward. People get confused that if they're not the one making the decision, they're not empowered. And I don't believe that. Because a lot of the times, even though you're not the decision maker, you're closest to the data and you can influence the decision maker. So you are empowered, right? And so I was empowered. I think I was coached. So I was given really good time feedback in the play, in the game, right? Coaching is active. Coaching is getting that feedback with immediacy, which I really appreciate. And it's sometimes really hard to do. So it's like right after that meeting, she was always great. You know, we had to travel to customers often. Her name was Sally McGee. So I will mention her. She's amazing. We still keep in touch. But Sally would give feedback on, hey, this, you did this really well. And here's one thing you could improve upon. So that was with immediacy. And then I think she also let me see what was ahead of me. So what would this job open up instead of being so singularly focused on this role? And I think that's important, right? Especially with the next generation. Everyone's like, well, what's my next job? And you're like, wait a minute, accomplish the skill set here, get the experience here. And so she did a really nice job of helping me see what this job could unlock for the future. And that's important. And she saw that that was a passion of mine, right? I wanted to move forward. I wanted to have a career. So I think those are probably the three things that I take with me today as what a great manager did and what got me excited to be, to be a leader. Because I think there are people who choose to continue to be a individual contributor and we need them on our teams and they do an excellent job. And so I remember when I took that step change to be a first time leader, that those are the three principles that I still take with me today.
So you spent 15 years at J&J.
Yes.
Right? That's a long time.
I still feel like I've just been there for a minute.
All right. So early in the career, and you had this manager, I'm sure other great managers.
Yeah, amazing too. Managers there.
They took the time to like let you shadow meetings and then you would leave a meeting and then explain to you why they said what they said or why they didn't say something, right? And give you like a little behind the scenes is like what played out. So now we fast forward to the world that we're in now, which is very different from a speed perspective in our work. Do the teams around you have the time to do that anymore? Because I feel like in my company, like maybe 20 years ago, people junior would be able to just shadow for a year. But like if we can't afford to do that and we don't have the time to do that anymore. So I'm curious to know like how you're able to apply that into a faster paced work.
Yeah, it's definitely harder, right? And also the hybrid world makes that harder. Because I think that's what was so lacking during COVID is that ability to participate in that meeting. I mean, you were really like, you were just a little video square, not really getting that experience. One thing we're actually just talking about it this week as a team is creating those opportunities for talent. So different than come in a meeting or shadow me on this is creating small SWAT teams or small project teams, giving them a killer question that we have as a leadership team. They're closest to it. Let them work on it, come back with a recommendation, and then have an opportunity to share out to us as a leadership team. Like leadership teams are not just to sit around a boardroom table and have a conversation and make. Leadership teams are about tapping into the organization, and we are not the smartest ones often at the table. And so we need to say, what's the challenge we're facing, tap into the organization, and then give them the opportunity to come in and discuss with us and create a forum where talent can discuss with us, bring forward their ideas, their recommendations. So you have to be very purposeful now as a leader to create those moments. The other thing is that I love that ELC, that Estee Lauder has, is reverse mentoring. So while it's sometimes hard to always bring someone in, if you have the reverse mentoring and you're creating that moment, you are of course always, with your mentee, you're kind of spending the time, but that gives them a chance to open up and share with you some things you can learn. And then you can impart on them your experience, your advice in a really authentic way. And I think that is something I've seen work really well at the organization I'm excited to be a part of. But so probably those are the two things that I think about. And then also you have to kind of help people now. Like networking, I think, was something that was done much better, candidly, before COVID. And now I think you have to really force people to say, no, go network. And sometimes I find younger talent doesn't know how to. They don't actually know what that means, right? We used to have networking events and we used to have And we still have things like that, but it's sometimes they're hybrid and like stuff has just changed. So I think really teaching the next gen what is networking and giving back and paying it forward and how you do it in a meaningful way is super important. So that's some of what I've been thinking about a lot lately.
I didn't understand what networking was early in my career, and I didn't until I had my own business and started working with a business
coach. You thought it was just showing up at a cocktail hour and like talking to someone that didn't work for your company, right? It was like trying to stretch you.
I really didn't like, I felt like I lived like a world on the outside on the fringes because I worked at, I didn't work at Lauder. I didn't work at Coty. I didn't work at these big companies. Right. So when I'd go to these CEW events, I worked at L'Occitane en Provence, I mean, which is a huge company now. But like when I worked there, we were like, you know, like small but mighty, but, you know, pretty small. So I'd walk into these rooms and it'd be the circle of people who all worked at Lauder together and the circle of people who all worked at L'Oreal together. And I'd be standing there and I literally, I love that I did this. I had to Google like how to go to a networking event. And the response on Google said, don't try to talk to people who are already like clustered up and together, like find one person who's standing by themselves and go introduce yourself. So to bring it forward, I went to an event last week and I brought one of my team members.
I love that.
We were standing together talking and I didn't know anyone in the room. She didn't know anyone in the room. And we were talking about like, just like how I've learned how to do this and navigate events and meet people and make it meaningful. And I said, what I just told you, I look for that one person in the room. And there happened to be this one person. She's standing right near us all by herself. I said, and we're going to do this right now. And we went over and talked to her and it was so lovely. And like, that's why you do this.
Yeah.
So,
but Jody, what I love that you just said is that you brought someone from your team and I'm sure that they were so excited to go to that event. And so you and your career have been so fortunate to go to luncheons and amazing speaking events. And I think that that's another thing we can do as a leader is, you know, get an extra seat at that table and bring someone from our team. And, you know, that first time you go to one of those events, it's always kind of like, what do you do? And so to have that moment that your employee had, that's really special. And I think we need to do more of that.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking after that Women's Wear Daily event that we were at, because my agency buys a table because we can invite our clients to it. And it's like such a nice, lovely day. And I'm like, my team needs a table here. Like it's such an incredible event and everybody, there's so much incredible, generous learning. And it's not just like salesy things on the stage, right? It's like real learning and really meaningful. Like my team needs this. So yeah, I think like all of us as a leadership team here, like we always need to bring a plus one whenever we go, wherever we go, if it's a small event or a big event, because that's where the enrichment happens too. Like how to navigate a room like this, how to be brave and just say hi to someone you have no idea who they are. Like these are all really meaningful moments.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. I remember the first time I brought a direct report to NACDS, which is like National Train Drug Association, the big meeting. And, you know, it's always at one of two hotels. There's kind of like some nuances to it. And when you go for the first time, when I went, I didn't know all of that. And so one of the things for me was like, man, I wish somebody would have told me, you know, for this morning breakfast, do this, be here, you know, wear this. There's that whole piece as a female that, and males too. So, you know, but that I think is so great when you can do that because it just eases somebody and then you know they're going to pay it forward, right? I know the person that I took is going to do that one day for their direct report when they go the first time. So I love that. I love that idea of the plus one. I'm going to steal that.
Let's leave Johnson & Johnson. So you 15 years there. How does someone, because I know there's a lot of lifers at these large companies, right? They're good to their people. What made you want to say, I'm ready for something new and I'll leave this organization and go to Bayer?
Yeah, an inflection point in my personal life. I had my second son, Connor, and we had went through some changes at Johnson & Johnson. I had an amazing career there, I have to say, and wonderful company, wonderful to people. It was personal for me. I had Connor and I realized I had lunch with five of my girlfriends. They have probably changed their job seven times since the time we graduated. And I was the only person sitting around the table, like at J&J, still in consumer products. They're like, oh, what brand are you on now? You know, what customer are you calling on? And I realized, oh my gosh, all I know is within the walls of J&J. And what really was personal for me as to why I left is I wondered, I remember I got in that car. I remember the song that was playing. I remember the smell in the air. I wondered if it was inside me or inside the walls of J&J that made me successful. I didn't know if I left J&J, if I could be successful, because all of my leaderships, all of my skill sets, all of my capabilities had been built in those walls. And so for me, I needed to get out of them. I needed to make a change. And I also just had my second son, so I didn't want to make a major change. So I looked for, you know, it's that old saying, like, don't change too much, change one thing. So I looked to change one thing. And so that's what drove me to Bayer. It was an incredible opportunity to come in. They were going through turnaround. So I got to stay in the healthcare space and I moved closer to healthcare. You know, I was on the, when I ended at Johnson & Johnson, I was on the Neutrogena and Rock and all their skincare and baby businesses, wonderful brands. But I was like, oh, you know what? I want to get back to my passion for healthcare. I want to get back to healthcare. And so that's what led me to Bayer. So it was a real personal transition. And that was the deep meaning behind it. And, you know, there were all things when I left about, oh, I left because of this or that. It was so personal to me. You know, I thought it was going to be more sad than it was. I'd been there for so long. And I think what I realized is I still keep in touch with so many wonderful people. And you realize that they come with you. Like the people, the mentors, they'll all come with you. Nobody once said to me, oh my gosh, you can't, or no. I mean, even my boss at the time, he's like, look, I can't debate it with you. I'm so supportive. And if you want to come back, you let us know. I left on such beautiful terms that it really, in the end, within 24 hours, I was like, okay, I know this was for the right.
Let's just break this down a second, because you said something so interesting, like with so much vulnerability and honesty. Like, am I good outside of, basically, yeah. am I good at this outside of the structures of this company? That's a big, scary thought to it's like huge, allow your brain thought. To face, right? Like, you're being very brave when you say that to yourself, because that's as real as it gets, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I got there because I was on maternity leave, right? I was away from it. And I think that maternity leave for me and having my son, that's why it took that massive inflection point. Because I think if I had been at that lunch and gone right back to work, right? Like think if I met my girlfriends and then went right back, I would have went right back in. And I don't think I would have had that moment. I don't think I would have had it. So I always say like things happen for a reason. And I feel like that lunch, that moment happened for that.
I'm really astounded by how much courage it takes for you to really honestly, that's like looking in the mirror. Like, am I good at this? Is this just safe because I know like the methodology and I know how to get one phone call from one end of the building to another end of the building or, you know, something approved. And I'm curious, do you, I guess, push your mentees to be as brave as that, to like really look in the mirror?
It's funny. I do. I push my mentees. Partly where I get that push from is my dad. So my dad has, like, I grew up with parents that are super direct. Like, they'll hit you between the eyes, right? You know, like, I remember once I called my dad and I was like, well, I'm really not sure if my dad's like, hey, you blew it. Like, just get over it. Like, you blew that interview. Like, let's move on. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. I blew it. All right. Got it. In a very, like, that might sound cold, but like in a really caring way, and like the directness of like, okay, like just, this is like, let's be real. And so that is part of me. Like, I think I am super direct at times. It's something as a leader you have to be really cautious of. You have to have your antennas up, that you're not too direct. But I think that is the mentor I want to be. I want to, you know, that mentor who told me you're a chicken going to marketing. Like, I want to, because I think sometimes with your mentees, you can see their potential and they can't. And sometimes it is that tough love. It is that provocative question. And I think that's the way I do it, is I try not to say, I try to ask. Like, let me ask you, have you thought about? And then that gets them thinking. And I hope it plants that bug that was in my brain that day that said, huh, is it inside of me or is it inside of those walls? And how are you going to know unless you go, right? How are you going to know? And what's the worst that's going to happen? So I try to, with mentees, I do try to push, but I try to do it with questions and the tell.
That technique of asking the question, it's like a therapist trick, right? Because if a therapist, like if they're sitting with a patient and they're telling them this is what's happening, the patient's not ready. Like, right? And it's either going to go over their head or they're going to get offended or just walk out the door, right? And never come back. So being patient and like seeding an idea as a question is a way to get the person on the other side of that conversation more comfortable,
yes,
and make everything feel like it was their idea, right? Which is really the idea. This is the trick, right? Like you know how much potential this person has. You know they're being, you know, too nervous or too worried or whatever. But if you say that to them directly, it's like a wall is being built right away. So I love the of that trick.
Yeah, and I think it does take a little while to get somebody there, right? Making a big career, you know, leaving a company, it's more common now. It doesn't make it easier. It's still hard. Mm-hmm. Like those decisions are hard and it gets harder as you're a caregiver and things are added, right? So, but I think like planting those seeds, those questions, and then say like, okay, call me next week and see where you are. And it's really interesting to see eventually people get there, but they got to get there in their own way, you know?
Yes. I want to go back to this, what you said about your dad, like, would you say hit you between the eyes?
Yes.
Okay. So with your kids, because I want to talk about it with my daughter. So my daughter's an amazing artist. She's 13. And she says to me, like, I'm not going to ask you if this is good because you're just going to say it's good anyway because you're my mom, this kind of thing. So, but I have said to her, I don't think this is your best work or, you know, it doesn't seem like you put an effort in. So I'm curious, like with your kids, like, do you – like, how honest are you about things like this?
Yeah, I'm honest. Because I think it's been, I will tell you growing up, sometimes it was really hard, right? Like, you know, I remember I really wanted to be a good track runner and I wasn't that fast and it's okay. And my dad would be like, Mom, like maybe cross country, right? Like maybe distance instead of sprinting, you know, because he saw some, but again, he saw something. And so, you know, if my kids are really passionate about something, but they're not the best, I think it's about they're passionate about it. So inspiring them to, why don't you try this? Or, but, you know, if my kids ask me their opinion, like if they put on, you know, an outfit or whatever, and they ask me like, well, what do you think? You know, there are times I'm like, no, but they know. And I think my son said something to me the other day, which is like super interesting. We were having a conversation and I knew something was going on at school. And I said, hey, something's going on at school, isn't it? You know, are you struggling? And he said, no, right? Like kids are always like, no, I'm fine. How was your day? Fine. Everything's fine. And I said, did you have that feeling in your stomach, you know, that like it was tough and you couldn't do it? Or did you get a frustrated stomach? And he's like, how did you know it was in my stomach? And then that kind of lets it pull out. But I wasn't going to let it go. So I think it's not only am I direct with my kids, but sometimes it's easy for people to say, fine, no, I'm good. And I kind of will work at it a little bit, but you do have to work at it with the kids, right? You have to figure out the angle, but I don't want to lose that directness that my dad had with us, because I think it's what made me realize at times that I am not doing a good job or wow, I got to turn this around. It's that compass that he gave us is super strong. And I want to instill that in my kids and anybody I have the opportunity to work with.
You and I could talk for hours, so I am going to move us along. But okay, I do want to say that when my son was in elementary school, you know, kids get a little crazy by the end of the school year. Like they can feel the summer coming. Yes. And that it's the excitement of the year ending and summer starting. But it's also, I think, like the fear of, oh my God, in September, I'm going to have a new teacher and new rules and, you know, new things to do and harder work and more homework. So there is some anxiety in that. It's just in addition to excitement. And we used to describe it as like, is there like a tornado in your belly? And it's interesting how you refer to it in a similar way, like something inside of you. And that's a way that we were able to figure out, like, what is going on? Why is this kid who's like a rule follower all of a sudden not following the rules? Like, it was all of that stuff inside of him that was like, you know, trying to jump out. So, okay. I want to move to, okay, like, I understand leaving J&J, looking in the mirror, but like this opportunity with Clinique, like this is very, very cool. Can you tell me like how that came about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where my experience at Bayer was incredible. I moved into general management, so the opportunity to run big brands, I had a huge passion for it. But then the opportunity with Clinique came up and it was just something I couldn't say no to. And, you know, personally, I've used the brand for years. You know, my mom used the brand. She took me to get my makeup at the counter. I thought I was getting makeup. She actually was giving me her gift with purchase, her free gift, but that's okay. And you know, so I kind of grew up with it. But then also it was a brand I came back to when I was pregnant. I had really tough acne. And I not only needed to treat it, but I needed to cover it up because I was like, oh my God, I'm like 30 something with all this acne. And so it's been a brand that's been with me at really just interesting moments, right? I wore it on my wedding day. Like it's just, I have this deep passion for the brand. And that's really interesting because I've worked on a ton of brands and I've used a ton of brands. And sometimes you're the consumer, sometimes you're not. But when you're this passionate, it's like, it's amazing. It's like, I get to come in to like be a fan of the brand every day. So that's really special. But the piece that I love is it lets me bring healthcare and beauty together. It's a dermatologist rooted brand. I mean, it was founded by a dermatologist and the editor of Vogue. Like, couldn't be a cooler combination of taking science and beauty and it coming together. Our clinicals are, you know, the same type of clinicals that I understand from the healthcare side. And so it's kind of this cool place where I got to come back to beauty, but I got to do it in the healthcare space. So I'm super excited to be here. I'm learning so much. Estee Lauder is an incredible organization and full of just smart and talented people. So of course I had those jitters. I had that tornado in my stomach my first, couple of days of, am I gonna fit? How am I gonna feel? Wow, this is a big team. How will they take to me? And what I think I found out too late in life is be you, like be you, because it is inside of you. It's not inside of the walls. I learned that. And I think Bare was an incredible opportunity to teach me that. And it was an amazing stepping stone to be where I am. But and so I'm embracing myself more as a leader as to who I am more than ever. And it does lead you to be successful. But that's hard to see when you're your 20-year-old self. So if that's my one thing I could tell my 20-year-old self is worry less about how to fit in and do more of being you.
I love that sentiment. I spent many, many years as a business owner thinking I had to pretend to be like, yeah, cool. Like, really, you know, because it's like in advertising, like everybody's cool. It's cool furniture. It's expensive chairs. Like, this is what I saw, like this totally. Facade. And that's like so not me. I don't care about any of that. I don't care about the chairs. You know, or like, yeah, who designed the totally conference room table and like whose shoes am I wearing? I didn't care about any of that. And then the day that I like actually started being vulnerable and like really real and weird and everything that I am is the day that my business started to grow.
Yeah.
So it was like really, it was getting in my way of success by pretending to be somebody I'm not.
Well, you know why? And I deeply believe this. When you're you, you allow others to be themselves. And when people feel that they can belong, that they fit, they belong, that's what we're all seeking for, right? I mean, we got to go to work, right? We got to make ends meet. So, you know, there's this piece of, but when you can let someone feel like they belong, they're more creative, they open up, they drive the business, but it really comes from how you are, right? If you had set up your office with all that perfect furniture and all of that, it shows that that's not you, right? Because you wouldn't have been your authentic self. So I think, you know, I wish I would have worried about the shoes or this less. It's, that stuff is important. You know, we can't come in our weekend tennis shoes to work. But what's most important is when you let your authenticity come through, right? There are times where we have to have hard conversations about organizational updates or, the hurricane that just happened and checking in with the team. And, you know, sometimes you don't know the perfect words as a leader, but I think when you can say, hey, I don't know exactly what to say, but here's how I'm feeling, that goes such a long way than having that perfect script and fitting in the way we think we should.
I love that. It's a really good segue to the last topic I want to talk about on this part of the show, which is empathy. So we spent our time like actually proving out that empathy in the work creates business success. So not just like I'm empathetic with my team members, not the HR side of it, but the actually like infusing it with like being standing in the shoes of that customer, that end user, like thinking about all those objections or worries or fears or confusion or whatever. So I would think that through your career at these brands, like empathy has been a really important driver of success in your programs.
Yes, I love that. I think, you know, empathy to me from a consumer product standpoint is deeply understanding the needs, the wants of a consumer. And I think, you know, some of the best marketing creative I've ever been able to work on is when you get to that insight, that almost just like pushes so hard on how that consumer feels at that moment. Probably one of the most interesting categories I've worked on is pain, right? When I was on the Aleve business and really understanding those that are suffering and you know, our product point of difference is, you know, it was 12 hours designed for persistent pain sufferers. And, you know, when you understand their stories and you can show that as a brand, you empathize with them, it's showing this deepest level of understanding. So I think it's been incredibly important on the brand building side, but then also to your point on the leadership side, you know, it's not about, it's really about taking what you know people are going through and showing that, you know, you don't always have the perfect words, you don't always get that right, but that you're there for them and you really care and you see them and you see what they're going through. And you know, I think COVID really taught us a ton of that.
We think of it as like we all have the data. We can start with the data, which is obviously emotionless.
Yeah.
And then we can build insights off the data, which is good. But like what we in our industry have to do is we have to layer in the empathy. Otherwise, it's just surface, right?
Totally. And otherwise, anybody can say it.
Yeah.
Anybody
and maybe surface is fine in like, I don't know, another category. But here, like we're touching people's skin, right? Like it's, we're dropping drops in their eyes or, you know, like putting toothpaste in their mouth. Like it's so intimate. So without the empathy and without really understanding all those moments in time where this product plays a role, it's just flat.
Totally. I mean, and it's also because of the history of advertising in these categories, right? It's been all about those real functional benefits. And it's well beyond that now. It has to connect. It has to hit on something that's deeper. So this idea of like self-care, I love where the business has gone. We weren't talking self-care 10 years ago. That was like, I mean, we had just started and we were like, oh yeah, you know. But now it's amazing that consumers have evolved there. So they expect it of us. They expect empathy. And so when you just talk functional, you realize it's not going to cut it.
Yeah, they're bored. You know, I have 1,000 makeup brushes if you're just functional.
Yeah. I don't need to hear about it. If you're just brushing my face, move on. Yes.
Okay, we could talk for hours and we probably will get a chance to. I have, by the way, like an archive of Clinique work I want to show you behind the scenes. You're going to smile at some of the stuff.
I'll
text you about it.
Okay,
so we're going to transition now to our after show. So thank you, Kelly, for your wisdom today. This is amazing. Okay, we have like 3 minutes left. Let's see if we can get to 2 questions.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so there's fans in the conversation right now that actually want to talk to you and learn more career advice from you. So can they reach out to you on LinkedIn?
Yeah, of course. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can DM me, like whatever's easier. I'm so happy. I would value that. So I'd love that.
I want to say that LinkedIn is a surprising place because people really do show up and you won't get like, if you're sending out like 20 notes, like, hey, can I get to know you, learn about your, you know, your career? 20 people won't respond back, but like 2 people will, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's a good, like that's a really good percentage. So to anybody who's listening, who feels like they want to know more about what's out there, what their opportunities are, you just have to make those connections. You have to say, hi, I'm an XYZ. I'm studying ABC. Can I learn more about what you're doing? Or can you connect me with someone who's, you know, around my age on your team? Like somebody will respond, but you just have to make that effort. If you don't make the effort,
and
they're not reading your mind.
And my best advice is if you get someone reach out to you LinkedIn and you don't think you can help them, go in your network and say, hey, I might not be the best person to talk to, but talk to so-and-so. Like pay it forward. Connect people. We're also fortunate to have great networks. So yeah, but I love that. Like you got to reach out. You got to do it. It's the new networking.
Yeah, I think that when a very young person reaches out to me, I think it's more of value for them to talk to someone on my team who's closer to like post-college. Right? Like I'm 49 years old. Like a lot has changed. Like I don't know how to get a first job anymore. So I think it's really a value to like find someone on your team or a few people on your team who are willing to have a 15-minute, 30-minute conversation with someone who's interested in this career. And then it gives that person new skills, like, you know, pre-mentor skills, and also provides valuable insights. So that's something else I like to do.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Okay, so this is a really good question, and this might have to be our last one. What is a part of your daily routine that we might not expect?
Oh, so I wake up early now. I take the train, And I need 5 minutes of singing in my car in the morning. I'm probably admitting this to like people who are working with me. I probably want. I need that minute of just like getting energy out. I'm very high energy, but I need that minute in the morning of just like singing a good old song in the car. So when I don't have the commute to be able to do that, I don't feel myself in the morning. So that's maybe one thing. I just got to sing a good old song to myself, like I'm singing in the shower in the morning.
Okay, I had to draw one more line. In the beginning of this conversation, when you were at lunch with your friends, you had just had your second child. You remember the song that was playing when you decided.
Yes.
Am I like capable of this, or is this just the walls of J&J that is doing this work for me? Okay, so what was that song?
Oh, it's Moana's song. Gosh, what's the one where she's singing if she can go, she doesn't know how far. It's a great song. I played a lot of Disney for my son. And so I was just like, oh my God, I'm Moana. Like, I gotta go.
Okay. So now every morning in that car on like when you're doing those rides to the train station, what is the song that's playing or like style of song that you're belting?
Anything. Unfortunately, it's right now my kids are like taking over my YouTube music. So, I mean, the other day it was like old school Backstreet Boys. I'm very sad to like admit because people who know me know I listen to a lot of Fish and I like a lot of jam bands. But sometimes I love the unexpected. I plug my phone in, and if my kids have been listening to like stuff on my phone, it comes up. So you don't know. It could be Bluey that I'm singing to. There's a whole mix. I'm not shy. And I listen to it very loud. I probably need to be more mindful of like who's next to me when I'm blasting my Bluey music.
We are a very big Disney family in my household. And even though my kids are a lot older now, they're 17, 13, like we're still like devoted Disney family.
It.
And we have a lot of Disney like trivia, like we've been Disney all over the world. And whenever Mother Gothel's Mother Knows Best from Tangled comes on, it's like literally my favorite. It's my favorite song ever. It is so genius. So I will be shouting some songs in my car too. It is very
fun
to be alone in the car.
And you're like, it's very therapeutic. No one's judging you. It's like you get some energy out. I'm like, all right, let's start the day.
Kelly, this has been so much fun.
This
is our 271st episode, so thank you for being a part of it. And for our fans who are listening, thank you for listening. Please rate and review the episode. As always, make sure you're following us on your favorite podcast platform and Instagram to stay up to date on all the fun. And Kelly, I can't wait to see you in real life, either in New Jersey or in New York City.
I know. All the best to you, and thank you for the opportunity. It was great to spend time with you and all of your fans today. Have a great weekend.
Happy weekend, everybody.
Thank you. Happy weekend. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.